Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. I'm your bunged-up host, Neil Reynolds. I've got a cold, sniffling my way through it. And Jeff, you've had some telecommunications issues as we set up this podcast.
The only way I can describe our communication system here is we are the Cleveland Browns of communication.
Ouch. Okay, so
we are bad. And I'm telling you, how you can turn the internet off, which affects the phones, and then not turn it back on, I mean, I don't know. But hey, that's not my decision. I just try to live in this world.
Not turn the entire internet off, surely?
Not yeah, we did.
The whole world.
I swear to goodness, I really, because I'm not a tech guy, right? I mean, I can't claim to even be one, but I'm just going to tell you, I think they keep that so mysterious. It's like, you know, the great and powerful Oz is behind the corner, and, you know, they don't want you to look behind the curtain because you might find out just how silly it all is.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if you like the internet and you like checking things out, I would recommend people getting on Twitter this morning and seeing Bill Belichick, how he's dealt with the media at the owners' meetings down in Boca Raton in Florida. And Belichick has he sat down, Jeff, at the, you know, they sit at these big round tables and they all meet with the media. And Belichick's just sat down and he's literally shoved every microphone that's in front of him about 3 foot away so that he can put his arms on the table. So he's in a fantastic mood today.
I heard it was Eggs Belichick this morning at the owners' meetings, the coaches' breakfast.
Yeah, well, but he should be feeling pretty good about his team, Jeff, because actually free agency has calmed down a little bit. But since we last spoke, the Patriots have been very busy. So they trade away Chandler Jones, their number one pass rusher, for Jonathan Cooper from the Arizona Cardinals and a second round draft pick. So it's back to back picks at 60 and 61 for the Patriots in the second round of the draft. And then he's traded for Martellus Bennett. He signed a former first round player in running back Donald Brown. He signed another former first rounder in Shay McClellan. These are the kind of let free agency die down and then stock your roster moves that the smart teams seem to make. I mean, we'll wait and see how it plays out, but to me, I put it on Twitter, I feel like these are smart moves.
I agree with you, Neil. These are the kind of moves that organization typically makes. And you look at each one of them, and let's say there's four, right? And I believe you went through four moves.
Yeah.
And if they hit on two of four, financially, it's a huge advantage. And, you know, you look at what they expended in free agency and trades and what they got back in free agency and trades, you got to say that at least on paper, these are all good, solid football moves. Now, I was in Phoenix last week when the Chandler Jones deal went down, and people in Phoenix feel like, you know, that pass rushing piece is the missing piece on the defense that will take them to the Super Bowl. But you also got to understand, he's a year away from free agency himself. When you look at what guys like Ayers got and, you know, some of the huge free agency contracts for pass rushers out there right now, I'm sure that they looked down the road and said, hey, listen, with all the other guys that we're going to have to sign, and I think there's four or five of them next year, with key players with the Patriots, core players with the Patriots that they're going to have to sign, with the, you know, off-the-field thing that Chandler Jones got himself into this past year, and the fact that they're going to have to, you know, expend a huge amount to keep him beyond next year, you get a chance to help your offensive line with a former first-round pick, and you get a second-round pick. That to me is, you know, the kind of trade that's good for both clubs, and that's, you know, that's what trade should be. Bennett, I think, is a fascinating piece to me because if he's focused, Neil, he's an incredible talent. And that locker room has a way of focusing guys that, you know, come in there with somewhat spotted reputations. Randy Moss, you know, there have been a number of them that have come through at that point in their careers. And then, excuse me, I think we've talked, you know, since Donald Brown was in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I think that kid's a good player. And, again, fits their, you know, kind of what they look for in a running back. So, you know, in every one of those cases, I think it was a, strong trade for New England.
Yeah, impending free agents that Jeff mentions, the Patriots have to find a way next year to pay Jamie Collins, to pay Dante Hightower, and to pay Malcolm Butler. They probably can't do that and keep Chandler Jones, so they move on from Chandler Jones. Martellus Bennett is an interesting one for me, Jeff. I'm with you. Talent wise, he's got it all, and I'm interested to see if he does that toeing of the line that so many of those players do over the years in New England, because they suddenly realize they've got a chance to win and they're in a team concept. But this is a guy that's been in Dallas, he's been with the Giants, he's been with Chicago, and you know, has that reputation of being a discontented player. Now, if you're going to be happy anywhere, I guess it's in New England with Tom Brady throwing you the ball. But I don't know, Reggie Wayne wasn't happy when he went there last year, but I guess Bennett's the one where, for me, he's the one where we've got to wait and see, but he could have the biggest upside out of them.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, if intriguing, really, is the way I would put it, when you think what Josh McDaniels now has the ability to scheme up, because both Martellus and Gronkowski are that hybrid tight end who can go and play out wide and then also play in line.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go back to the days when they had Hernandez and Gronkowski. Now, Hernandez is a completely different animal than Bennett, but it was intriguing to watch what they did with him, where they actually had Hernandez in the backfield running plays as a running back in the backfield. And the fans have to understand how tough that makes it on a defensive coordinator, because you think of those two tight end sets as being power football sets, and they can be, because Gronkowski's a good inline blocker and Bennett's a better than average inline blocker. So you leave your big people on the field and start playing run defenses, and all of a sudden those guys are spread out as wide receivers, and you know, you've got massive matchup problems. And you know, then you move, you know, you're able to move those slot backs around, and you know, I think Chris Hogan was another really good signing for them in the offseason.
Yep.
A guy that, you know, maybe slips under the radar a little bit, but you watch him, he was very productive in his time in Buffalo.
One other move that sort of hit after we recorded last week's podcast, Jeff, Kelvin Beachum, we talked about, visited the Jacksonville Jaguars. He did go home to Pittsburgh, but he ended up signing with the Jags. And it looks like he's going to compete with Luke Jokel. And I think that's the right move, because Jokel hasn't proven that he deserves to be the undisputed left tackle there.
Well, I think it's really intriguing in that, you know, obviously there'll be competition in OTAs and minicamp and all that. If Kelvin can come back off his knee healthy, and he gives you that left tackle who can go out there and dance with the great pass rushers, does that now free Jokel into moving inside to guard? Because Jokel's a talent. It's just he hasn't maximized himself as a left tackle, which is the hardest position to play in the league. Or does he move to right tackle? It gives you some flexibility if you're Gus Bradley in Jacksonville. So this is a really, really good signing. And the other thing that Jacksonville will get with Kelvin Beachum is a great locker room guy and a real character guy. So he'll be a positive, I think, for them, particularly if he can come off that knee 100% as he was in Pittsburgh.
Jeff, I'm glad you mentioned Jokel potentially moving inside, because we had a question in the mailbag. I'm going to take it out now from Paul Mitchell Moore, and he was actually talking about Miami are playing Jamon Bushrod at tackle, but they may look at moving him inside to guard, because he played all five positions along the offensive line with Chicago. So this question from Paul Mitchell Moore says, what differences in techniques are needed between tackle and guard? And he says he was thinking that maybe a guard has to be more mobile for traps and pulls, etc., in the running game. But can you just switch a tackle to guard, Jeff?
Well, you know, there's a different skill set. And typically the guards play with a guy over the top of them, a bigger guy over the top of them. So you look at that, those inside defensive tackles in the 4-3, and you know, or the offset nose in the 3-4. Those are 340, 320 pound guys, and so the guard has to have some, you know, what we call, to use a coaching term, you got to have some lead in your pants. I mean, you got to be a physical guy, and you got to be able to anchor at the point.
Yeah.
Now, the tackle, because typically he's facing, particularly the left tackle, he's facing that wide rusher. He's got to be able to move his feet, and he's got to be able to change directions, where the guard has got to be able to set firm on the line of scrimmage and establish the pocket from the inside out so that the quarterback, if the edge is starting to disappear on him, he can step up in the pocket. The guys that kill you at guard and center are the ones that keep get driven back, and now the quarterback has no room to climb the pocket. So, you know, you look at that, Bushrod's one of those guys that gives you position flexibility. I think Joko could move inside and play. He's a physical kid, and he's strong, and, you know, he has all those capabilities, and certainly would be an athletic upgrade to what they've had at guard. So, again, I think those are the kinds of things that coaches like in their offensive linemen, is that, you know, kind of, you know, position flexibility, ability to play up and down the offensive line, because you're going to get injuries, and guys that can move are really, really valuable.
Oh, well, keep an eye on Joko, because the one thing that has been undisputed, Jeff, since he entered the NFL was the athleticism. The one thing that's been questioned quite a bit is the toughness. So that would be the question mark for me there. Just one other bit of news I wanted to touch on. There was a story out of the owners' meeting that the NFL are going to consider a regular season game in Germany in 2017, and there's some whispers of a regular season game in China in 2018. Of those two, Jeff, I'm going to say that the China one is the much more of a long shot, because the NFL went there a few years ago for a preseason game. That game actually never got played. And I guess there'd be some time difference issues, because you're looking at a game having to kick off probably at 9 p.m. on a Sunday night in China, just to be a breakfast kickoff on the East Coast of America. But I guess there's that growing temptation, now we've established things and you have the safety net of games in London, to spread that net further afield.
Right, and I got to ask you one question. Just how many Chinese are there?
Quite a few.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know what, and I can't give you the number either, Neil, but I know there's plenty of them. And you know how the NFL thinks, right? That's, let's see, if I put a hat on one out of every three of them, and yep, there's this many television sets, you know, it's intriguing, because what, you know, when that news came out this week, it was like the NFL's talking about playing a game in China, and then kind of after that, after it died down, it was, oh, and yeah, Germany too.
Right.
The one that really, really caught fire here when they talked about it was the Chinese visit. And I think, you know, with the there's much business is being done now between the West and China, and certainly, you know, all of those potential hats and shirts and televisions and all the things at the NFL, which is about money. I think that's an intriguing concept for the owners who look at that Chinese market as, whoa, boy, if we could just get a little piece of that, we'd make a bunch of money.
So what you're telling me is, Neil, do you have any idea how many dollars are available in China? Do not worry about the kickoff time.
Exactly. I think the kickoff time they can work around, right? And it's, when they start seeing all those, you know, I don't even know what the Chinese monetary currency is, but
yeah,
whatever it is, there's a lot of them.
You make a good point. Let's move on to our state of the franchise then. Let's continue the series. We took a week off last week because there was so much going on in free agency. We're back to team number seven picking in the NFL draft. It's the San Francisco 49ers. So the 2015 49ers opened and closed with wins, but only posted a 5-11 record. They were 4-4 at home, but just 1-7 on the road. That was enough to see our friend Jim Tom Sula shown the door as head coach. He's been replaced by Chip Kelly, who'd been fired by Philadelphia. So here's the tale of the tape. Offense was 31st in the NFL, last in scoring. I think they only went over 20 points four times last season. Rushing attack was 21st, passing 29th. Defense was 29th, so there was a lot to improve on, Jeff. They had a lot of money to spend, but have been relatively quiet in free agency. They've got the most money at the moment of any NFL team available, $59.4 million to spend. So why no free agency splash? The only answer I could come up with when I was asked this last week on NFLUK.com, and I wrote that maybe they're not in win now mode. So it's such a big rebuild that Trent Baalke wants to keep the draft picks, but you've got all this money to spend, and they just weren't factors in free agency.
Well, I think you're right. I think they basically look at it as this is a process. It's going to be a long process. And unless they could get a free agent that they could sign for the long haul, for the rebuild, that could they could, you know, focus around in the rebuild, it's better to go with younger players, draft picks, save that cap money as until you have to spend it. And, you know, in another year, once you've established your foundation a little more and Chip's gotten an opportunity to see exactly what he does have, because it usually takes about a year to really know what you have,
yep,
then go out and spend your money in free agency. I just really think that, you know, I thought about the 49ers, and it's such an incredible, you know, thing to think, Neil. You know, what was it, 3 years ago, this was a Super Bowl team.
Yeah.
And now you look at them, and they have so many needs, way too many needs to fix in one off season or one draft. And, you know, it's interesting, organizationally, where are they? Because Harbaugh got vilified for being, you know, hard to work with and, you know, all that stuff. But they bring in Jimmy, who's their chosen guy to guide them through this rebuild, and they, you know, 8 months later, they fire him. You know, they lose confidence in him and faith in him. And, you know, after one season, and they've got to have a plan and stick to the plan. I think this is really, really important for this organization, because change is so disruptive in the NFL. And, you know, this is one of the NFL's really proudest franchises in the last 30 years. And it's really hard for me to see what they've been reduced to.
Yeah, and it feels like they're stumbling, Jeff. You know, we saw the stories behind the scenes of Harbaugh and Baalke butting heads, Harbaugh and Jed York. And then last year, it's, well, Trent Baalke's coaching defensive backs. And now we've got Chip Kelly in there. So it seems like this is a franchise that was so well run over the years. It was the blue chip franchise, as you mentioned, such a proud history. And they've stumbled from one kind of disaster to another, and actually everything's still up in the air, Jeff, because we don't know what's going to happen with Colin Kaepernick. He is out there as trade bait, but, you know, no deal has been done as we record this podcast. But for a while, the 49ers were saying, you know, we'd love to have him, he's going to be here. And now suddenly Chip Kelly's saying, well, if he is here, we're going to coach the heck out of him, but it's only if he's here now. And so, you know, right there at the very top of the organization, you've got question marks around Chip Kelly because his style didn't work in Philadelphia. And actually, it's a fair question to ask, Jeff. Have the 49ers been quiet in free agency because no one wants to play for Chip Kelly?
Well, I think that's, you know, I'm sure there's some concern that way. You know, again, I will tell you this, though. The economics of free agency, you know, sure, they're, you know, with enough money, Donald Trump could get some guys to play for him. But, you know, it's just the reality of the business that, you know, a free agent's going to look at that organization and go, do I want to go out there and get my butt kicked in for a couple years, you know, or go someplace else where I have a better chance to win? That's another factor in this whole thing, too, if the money's equal. Mm. Now, let's talk about, I think that you're on the right track, let's talk about to cap or not to cap, right? That's
yep.
what it comes down to. Are you going to trade him? Well, think about what you're trading, Neil. The guy has taken a team to the Super Bowl. So you got to be able to get value back. And, you know, when you start hearing about fourth-round draft picks for a guy that's taking a team to the Super Bowl, you got to wonder about that a little bit, to me anyway. You know, Blaine Gabbert's not good enough. He's a backup. That's what he'll always be. He can win you a few games, but he's not going to take you anywhere in the long haul. So go back to Kaepernick. Here are the issues that I see with Kaepernick. Number one is his decision making, all right? He's not and never has been, all the way to his college days when he was at Nevada, a progression reader, a guy that's going to full, even half field. So you know that when he has success as a quarterback, when did he have success? When was he at his absolute best when he was playing quarterback? When he had a team that around him that could run the football, and he could make those long play action throws outside where he didn't have to read. It was just like, okay, if the guy's open, throw it, right? And that's where, that's what I think you've got. And I think they have to understand that if he's going to be your quarterback and he's going to be successful, and he's proven he can do it, but you have to have the system around him and the people around him to give him a chance to be what he is. And that's a, you know, it's a extremely talented, big arm, guy who can get away from trouble, but isn't good in the pocket, isn't, you know, a great decision maker, and it has a tendency to bail on the pocket too soon. But again, you can win with that if you play great defense and you have a strong running game, which they have neither of right now.
Right, they don't have those. And Jeff, aren't we misled sometimes into thinking that, well, Chip Kelly just wants a running quarterback? Because actually what Chip Kelly wants is somebody who doesn't turn the ball over like he's seen in recent years in Philadelphia. And he wants somebody who can operate at a fast pace and make good decisions. So, you know, if you're looking at that alone, that isn't Kaepernick, is it, at the moment? It's probably not Blaine Gabbert, but you know, neither of those guys, as you say, Jeff, I'm just going to give you this stat and then, you know, we can carry on talking about the offense. We are focusing on the quarterbacks as we often do in the NFL, but look who they have throwing the passes to. At the moment, their receiving targets are Quinton Patton. He had 30 catches last year. Torrey Smith, he had just 33 catches. Vance McDonald at tight end, he had 30. Bruce Ellington at wide receiver, he had 13. And Garrett Celek at tight end, he had 19 catches. There's no Anquan Boldin at the moment because he's a free agent. You've got Eric Rogers coming over from the CFL, but that's, we have to wait and see in terms of that. So, you know, the supporting cast is just not there, is it?
No, it isn't. And, you know, when you're looking at Eric Rogers to be, you know, your dynamic receiver, I mean, Eric Rogers is a talented kid and played real well up here, but he's going to have to go into the transition of playing into the National Football League. It's a different game. He doesn't have advantage of, you know, the unlimited motion that you get up here. Can he make the transition? Yeah, I think he can make the transition, but I'm not going to look at him as being a guy that's going to change the franchise or change your passing game. So you look at that, and obviously it's like a window into the entire organization. You know, they're just not good enough right now. That's just the way it is. And, you know, it doesn't mean they're going to stay that way, but that right now, offensively particularly, you know, they're just not good enough. And you look at that offensive line, and, you know, the one guy that you had, the one good player that you really had in the offensive line, you know, Alex Boone,
you lost him.
And you lose him. And you know, you lose him. Why'd you lose him? Because he had grown frustrated with the organization and the direction that the football team was going.
Jeff, what about quarterback in the draft? Is that an option? I mean, if Carson Wentz gets past Cleveland at 2, or if Jared Goff is still there at 7, do you feel that that's the way they're going to look?
I think they've got to, Neil. I really think, particularly if they don't have Kaepernick.
Yeah.
I think they've got to, because you just don't have enough at that position. And both of those guys. Now, when you look at those three quarterbacks that are in the draft that you mentioned, Wentz, you know, Paxton Lynch, and Goff, really it's Wentz, Goff, and Lynch in most people's estimation. Now, I know that Chip personally went to Goff's pro day at Cal. And so, obviously, there is some, you know, legitimate interest there, and there needs to be, because if you're going to let Kaepernick go, then in my opinion, they have to go quarterback with that first pick if any of those three is still on the board.
Just finishing up on offense, Jeff, Carlos Hyde, he only played in 7 games last year, but yeah, he had a foot injury. Is he a foundation back when he's healthy?
You know, he's shown flashes of that, but, you know, again, to be a foundation back, you got to stay healthy,
right?
You can't be on the sideline. So I think that's another area where they could use help. And, you know, as I looked at the team, 31-year-old Ahmad Brooks leads your team in sacks, right? And they had the fifth fewest sacks in the NFL. So they're deficient on offense. They can't score, and they can't get after the quarterback on defense. They desperately need playmakers in the secondary. You know, you look at it and you just go down the line. Offensive line, obviously, been decimated. in that offensive line in the last 3 years. Think about that offensive line that started against Baltimore in the Super Bowl and how many of those guys are gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they have legitimate needs up and down the line of scrimmage and on both sides of the football. So this is a huge draft for them. I think it's a huge, huge draft for them. They need to draft well and maybe pick up one or two of these guys that are still lingering around in free agency and once they see what they're going to do with the draft.
Yeah, I like Ian Williams, but that five-year deal where they re-signed him became a one-year prove-it deal because of his ankle injury. They need some help for Aaron Lynch in the passing game. Jimmy Ward and Kenneth Acker are two bright spots in the secondary, but as you say, Jeff, there aren't enough of those guys. So all three levels of the defense need some addressing. Navarro Bowman is one area we don't have to worry about. I mean, he was just fantastic, wasn't he, coming back having missed all of 2014, but he can't do it all by himself.
Yeah, and you say Navarro Bowman at linebacker. I mean, first of all, what are they going to be? Are they going to be a 3-4 team? They're going to be a 4-3 team? You know, but is Shane Scholes a good enough player? Is he a frontline NFL linebacker? In my opinion, no.
No.
I mean, he's a good player. He's a solid player, but he's not what you're looking for if you're going to contend for a playoff spot. So who's going to stand in there and line up next to Bowman inside? You know, so again, it's like we say, there are so many questions on this football team. And you mentioned Kenneth Acker. Kenneth Acker played for us at SMU. And Kenneth is a good young player, but he's not he's not what you would term a shutdown corner. And
right.
You know, think about the receivers in that division that they've got to line up against.
Yes, it's a long way back, it feels like, for this franchise, Jeff.
I agree with you. I'm not saying it can't happen.
Sure.
Just saying that the Niners fans have got to, you know, they got to have some patience. They got to, you know, they got to watch this draft very, very well. I think this draft is fascinating to me, Neil. This is really maybe the most fascinating draft in the last few years, and I hope you and I are able to cover it because I think we can really bring to the listeners and to the viewers some of the reasons why some of the teams, and 49ers are a perfect example, this draft is so critical to their long-term success.
Absolutely, and that is your way to your long-term success, is to draft well. We know that from many years. Let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles then. We've got them at number 8 because they've pulled off a trade with the Miami Dolphins, so the Dolphins move back to 13, so the Eagles will pick 8th overall in the 2016 draft. They went 7-9 in 2015. That signaled the end of the Chip Kelly regime, as we just mentioned. Personnel power was handed back to Howie Roseman. Doug Peterson hired as the new head coach. And they've been busy in free agency. They signed Brandon Brooks, a good guard from Houston. Rodney McLeod from the Rams at safety. Quarterback Chase Daniel. Linebacker Nigel Brabham. Cornerback Ron Brooks. Corner Nolan Carroll's been re-signed. And they signed wide receiver Chris Givens. But, Jeff, this might be where Howie Roseman has done his best work. They offloaded some of their trash that they absolutely wanted to get rid of. And they got something in exchange for all of them. DeMarco Murray to Tennessee. The team swapped fourth-round picks. So the Eagles now pick second in that round four. Tennessee pick 15th. Kiko Alonso and Byron Maxwell to Miami. And they swapped first-round places with Miami. So they now pick 8 instead of 13. And Mark Sanchez offloaded to Denver. They get a conditional pick based on him making the roster and playing time with the Broncos. So, first of all, on all of that, Howie Roseman's made a good start to sort of taking back some of that power.
Yeah, and I think you have hit it right on the head. The issue here, first and foremost, that Doug Peterson's going to face is, how do I mend the fences between ownership, front office, coaching, locker room, all of it. Because this was a fractured franchise,
right,
where, you know, as you mentioned, Roseman had been banished to the, you know, to another building, really had been shamed, you know, out of his job. The owner is out on the 50-yard line hugging LeSean McCoy before the Buffalo game, which sends absolutely the wrong message to the coaching staff and to the other members of the team. You've got a locker room that was divided. You've got players openly critical of the head coach. So all of those things need, number one, to mend. And I think Doug Peterson's a perfect guy for that. Doug was our quarterback in NFL Europe, you remember, in 95.
Yep, absolutely.
He's got that even tone, he's been in the locker room as a player. He understands. And again, I was very impressed with his press conference at the head coaches meetings. He came across as a guy that has a plan and knows what he wants to do, and is going to be able to, I think, mend some of those fences. And they've done, in my opinion, and you always talk about the Eagles winning the offseason, but I think they've done a good job, as you mentioned, of going out and starting to rebuild and mend the football team.
Let's look at the football team then, and some of the numbers. So the offense was 12th overall, but turnovers again, Jeff, hurt this team. They ranked 29th in the NFL in turnovers. Defensively, they were 30th overall. They were last against the run, 28th against the pass. Back on offense, they were 14th rushing, 12th passing. So they've re-signed Sam Bradford at $18 million per season. Doug Peterson anointed him as the starter. But let's take a look at this Chase Daniel deal, Jeff, because they signed Chase Daniel as a backup quarterback from Kansas City. It's a 3-year deal. On paper, it's worth $21 million, but that could rise to $36 million with bonuses. And I looked at this, Jeff. There are 96 quarterbacks in the NFL if you put 3 on each team. Only 26 have more guaranteed money in their contracts than Chase Daniel. So is he a backup? They're paying him like a starter. Is it an open competition?
Well, I think this is one of the things that came out of Doug's press conference. I thought this was really, really an interesting point for him to make. They talked about Chase Daniel, and he said that the thing that Chase Daniel can give him is like an extra coach, because he knows the offense and he can help teach the offense, which I thought was interesting. He's been brought in here not only to play, he's been brought in to help the other players learn the offense that they ran in Kansas City that Doug wants to run in Philadelphia. On top of that, he knows exactly what Doug wants. So this is really a good situation, in my opinion, for the Eagles and for Doug, in that he's got Sam Bradford as his anointed starter, his $18 million guy. But behind him, he has a guy who he knows, who he trusts, who he's been through the battles with. And there are not very many situations in the NFL where you have that kind of luxury at quarterback. Now, it's costing them a minimum of $25 million a year to have that. But I think that's what they feel they need to do, number one, to get the offense going again. And, you look at this offense, all right, and I think you got to start always up front in the offensive line. Mm-hmm. And guard is really a problematic area for them.
Yeah.
They basically gave Evan Mathis away last year, and that's a Pro Bowl player. And then Andrew Gardner gets hurt in the third game, and he can't finish the season. So you're playing with guys that aren't good enough. They've got to improve at guard, particularly if they're going to, if they're going to get better on offense.
Yeah, Brandon Brooks hopefully does that, because I think you're right. Right up the middle was a lot of pressure on Sam Bradford. And offensive line play in general was inconsistent. And Jeff, it got to the stage, I think, where things got so bad towards the end of last year. You saw the game where they were still in playoff contention and they lost to Washington. And Jason Peters took himself out of that game because he didn't want to injure his back anymore. And I don't know, it just sent that just to me looked like a team that was imploding. It kind of started up front. I still like what I see from Bradford every now and then, Jeff, and I've always been a believer in him in terms of having that pretty pass that he can throw, the perfect sort of textbook pass, but then he kind of keeps letting you down when you're about to start fully believing in him.
Yeah, he's had that struggle over the course of his career. Coming out of college, Oklahoma, I thought his accuracy was off the charts.
Yeah.
But, he's been beat up and hit so much that I think that's, kind of affected his development as a player. If they can protect him and put him in a system where he gets the ball out of his hand fast, and he does have a quick release, and he is accurate, and you think about what Kansas City did with all those smoke screens and the quick, bubbles and all that stuff to get the ball out of his hands, and then they featured the tight end. But I look at this Philadelphia offense, Neil, and you did it for San Francisco, so I'm going to do it for Philadelphia. Let's talk about the receivers. Jordan Matthews, 85 catches, 900. He's a legit guy. But after that, you got Nelson Aguilar, you got Chris Givens, Josh Huff, John Krause, Freddie Martino. That's not exactly murderer's row. So – you know, you go past Jordan Matthews, and there's not much proven there. I mean, they took Aguilar, you know, last year, and as a rookie, had 23 catches and showed flashes, but you know, that's not much at receiver. And then you go to running back, and again, Ryan Matthews 539 yards, but Kenyon Barner 124, Darren Sproles 317. Even if you're doing it by committee, you don't have 1,000 yards at running back. And you know, Zach Ertz and Celek are good players at tight end, so that's where I think the production is going to have to come, and they've got to find a young receiver.
I thought Ryan Matthews was going to end up on the chopping block, Jeff, or on the trading block, so maybe they're still going to look another running back in the draft. Maybe Ezekiel Elliott, number 8 overall, I don't know, but feels like they're not finished with the running back position. And you're right, the tight ends, they got handsomely rewarded in this offseason. You know, Brent Celek signed a 3-year contract extension. Zach Ertz, 6 years, $44.5 million extension. It was almost like, I don't know, they want to believe in Zach Ertz by paying him the money, because I see, again, flashes, but not the full package.
Well, yeah, I agree with you, and that's a lot of money to pay for a guy for 853 yards, only 2 touchdowns. You know, that's a lot. That's $20 million a touchdown. But let's think about, you know, as you look at him, and you say, what has Rossman said in the lead-up to the draft? He's been vocal about the fact that he's not a guy who believes in the devaluation of the running back.
Right.
And you look at where they're picking, right? You look at that number 8 spot, and the guy that you mentioned is the guy that you got to think, well, that's who they're going to go with then, is Ezekiel Elliott, you know, the running back out of Ohio State. But is that disinformation to put other people off the trail, or is that actually what they're going to do? I think it's going to be fascinating to watch it go, because this is a team that is also not the best team in the league. As you mentioned, 30th on defense last year, gave up 28 points a game and only had 15 sacks. You look at these guys and you know, you say, all right, Connor Barwin, player, right? Nolan Carroll, flashes, looks like he can play. Fletcher Cox, player, 9.5 sacks.
Yep.
You know, Brandon Graham, 6.5 sacks at outside linebacker. Malcolm Jenkins, 109 tackles and two interceptions. But other than that, there's a lot of holes in that defense. It gave up a lot of big plays in the secondary.
They didn't, and maybe they need another pass rusher, because you know, Fletcher Cox is a very, very good player, Jeff. I like him. I think he's a pro bowler, but yeah, he should be creating opportunities for other people on the outside. And if Brandon Graham's got 6.5 sacks, I mean, where's your 15-sack guy on the outside? That may be something that could help out the secondary, and they've tried to help out the secondary, haven't they? They've added Leodis McKelvin and Ron Brooks, so you know they're trying some stuff anyway.
Yeah, I think Leodis McKelvin's a good player. Now I'm gonna give you a name, and Eagle fans, pay attention to this name, because they took the best defensive back, the best corner athlete in the CFL in this offseason. They signed a kid named Aaron Grimes out of Idaho, who'd been in Edmonton the last 2 years. And I'm going to tell you something. He's physical. He can run. He's comfortable playing up. He can play corner. He can go inside and play slot corner. He's an outstanding player. He plays with great effort and tenacity. I think he can be, for the Eagles, what Delvin Bro was last year for the Saints. That guy that, you know, nobody really pays attention to when you sign him in free agency, because he's a CFLer and you don't know that much about him. But I'm going to tell you something. Aaron Grimes is a football player.
All right, so I'm going to take a question out of the mailbag, Jeff, because we've mentioned Aaron Grimes and we've mentioned Eric Rogers. And we've got this question from Stevie Spencer. This is a good one. He says, is there a deal in place between the Canadian Football League and the NFL to recruit players between leagues? Do the CFL clubs get compensation if a player leaves for the NFL?
You know, that's a great question, and it's a question with history. If you go back to the old days, the contracts in the league were, they're mutually exclusive. If you had a CFL contract, you could not sign an NFL contract. Had an NFL contract, couldn't sign a CFL contract. Go back to the early 60s, and the players in the CFL were making more money than the players in the NFL were making. Well, with the advent of television, that changed. And now, I was a head coach in Winnipeg my first year, 1997, the CFL was really struggling to stay afloat. And the NFL came in and gave each team money to operate through the off season, and to do the deal, the CFL agreed to allow players in their option year to go to the National Football League, and if they were cut or played 2 or 3 years and then wanted to come and finish their career, they came back to the team that they were actually under contract with in the CFL. That rule has now kind of changed, and what there is a loose agreement, kind of a gentleman's agreement, amongst teams that, for example, a guy who maybe in his option year, the CFL will grant him a window of opportunity to see if there's an NFL interest, and if there is, then they'll set him free and let him go pursue his NFL dreams. That's good, in my opinion. That's a good rule. I think that's the way we need to handle it, because it gives the opportunity to the player, and it makes our league more attractive to the guys to come up here and say, "I want to go up and play because I need to play. I need the developmental time, and I'm not locked into a long term contract."
Yeah, they still have that pathway, don't they, then, Jeff?
Yeah, there is, and you know, you look at it, and you go around, and there are more and more of them all the time. There are guys, you know, all over the league now, all over the National Football League now, that started their careers up here, and some of them have been some of the better players in the NFL, and it's just there's so many guys that can play in the NFL that don't play in the NFL, and it comes down to opportunities, and you know, you maybe not. You got hurt as a college senior. You were playing in a position that maybe didn't, you know, fit where you're going to play in the National Football League, or it's just about having the opportunity.
So, just finishing up on the Philadelphia Eagles, Jeff. I feel pretty much like you just said with San Francisco, an important draft coming up. Although they've been active in free agency, this is a team that still needs to have a good draft at the end of April. And they need to fix, whether it's in OTAs or in training camp, is it Sam Bradford or is it Chase Daniel? If they can tick the draft box and then fix their quarterback position, then they're absolutely contenders in that NFC, surely.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And I think that is a great point to make. When you look at the 49ers, you have to understand they're in a division with two of the best teams in the National Football League, right, in Seattle and Arizona. You look at Philadelphia, on the other hand, they're in a division with teams that all have questions about them. The Cowboys, you know, we saw what happened to them last year when they lost Romo. Can they keep Romo healthy? He's had surgery on his shoulder this off season. You look at the Redskins, are they a flash in the pan or are they legitimate? And then certainly the Giants are going to go through a change now with Tom Coughlin gone and McAdoo in and all the changes they've made on defense. So it would appear anyway that the Eagles have a much better opportunity to get healthier faster, particularly because you got two guys at quarterback that you feel comfortable with.
Absolutely. So it's certainly got some depth at quarterback. Chase Daniel's been regarded as one of the best backups in the NFL. Let's move on to the state of the franchise for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Then they pick ninth overall in the 2016 draft. So the Bucs' 2015 season, well, it was a horrible home loss to Tennessee in week one, 42-14. Then they got competitive and were looking pretty good at 6-6. They lost their final four games of the year to end at 6-10. And it cost Lovie Smith his job, although that may be because the prospectors were circling around Dirk Cutter. They've added some talent in free agency. So they re-signed Doug Martin. They re-signed safety Chris Conte. They added pass rusher Robert Ayers, cornerback Brent Grimes, cornerback Josh Robinson, and Darryl Smith, who was the leader at linebacker in tackles for the Ravens in 2015, but also brings great leadership to the locker room. So offense last year was fifth overall in the NFL, number 5 rushing and 17 passing. Defense was 10th overall. Jeff, I don't know if Lovie Smith did that bad a job to get himself fired, but they obviously liked that connection between Dirk Cutter and rookie quarterback Jameis Winston.
You know, I agree, and I think that you made a great point, and I hope the listeners, you know, were paying attention. The reality of the situation, as I see it, is that Dirk's relationship with Jameis Winston was so strong, And as other teams in the league started to put out feelers about the possibility of getting Dirk to their organization, the Bucks ownership panicked and said, well, let's fire Lovey and make Dirk the head coach, because then we know that we've got our guy who, you know, can communicate well and gets the most out of this young quarterback. That's a really ugly reality of coaching in the National Football League, is that really it comes down. The quarterback, you have to make the quarterback healthy. You have to be able to keep the quarterback on his feet, and you got to be able to give that guy a chance to succeed. And I'm sure that the Glazers felt that Dirk was critical to that and made the decision to move Lovey out and Dirk up to the head coaching job. Now, that doesn't mask some of the other problems that this organization has. You're picking ninth for a reason.
Right.
To me, when I look at it, they address some of it. When Sterling Moore, and I love Sterling, he's like crazy. He's one of our SMU guys.
Yep.
When he's your best corner, then you know you've got some issues, because here's a kid who was not drafted, went to the Raiders, made it as a free agent with the Raiders, played with the Cowboys, played with the Patriots. He's done all that in five seasons in the NFL, right? So obviously, if you're an elite corner, you're not moving around that much unless you got some sort of problem. And Sterling Moore is a great kid, so it's not that.
And Jeff, I really like Brent Grimes over the years as well, but I don't think we should be fooled into thinking he's the long-term answer at 32. He was a declining player in the last year and a half in Miami. So they've kind of tried to stop the bleeding, but this is still an area of concern, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no question. And you're right. Grimes is at the back end of his career. But, you know, with he and Josh Robinson, and then you factor in Sterling, at least you're starting to get a little bit of depth in guys that have played and done it, right? Now, also, you got to look at pass rush, because that'll help the corners too, right? So you go out and you get Robert Ayers, right? But you still, and you pair him with Golston, you got some pretty good edge rushers now. But who can they put inside with Gerald McCoy?
Yeah.
Because Gerald McCoy can be a dominant player, but if you don't have a guy next to him, then what do you do offensively? You slide the center to him all the time, and now he's getting pinched and he's fighting through a double team to get to the quarterback. You got to have somebody else in there that can, you know, make plays for you rushing the passer. And I think that's going to be a key part of their, you know, as they look into their draft strategy. And this is a good year. You're going to get a great defensive tackle at nine. There's pass rushers at nine.
Jeff, the areas I look at with this team, and I think if you've got, Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson can still be quite a formidable partnership. Both 6'5", both give you that big target. They didn't really have a tight end that could attack the middle of the field last year. Austin Seferian Jenkins missed time through injury. Actually, Mike Evans missed a lot of time through injury, as did Vincent Jackson. So all three of those big targets are all 6'5". They can all go and win a jump ball. But where is our Julian Edelman? Where is our Chris Hogan? Where's that guy who I think could make a little bit of a difference in the middle of the field and help out a growing and developing Jameis Winston? It's not a top priority, but I think it might be something the Bucks should consider.
Well, if they can find one. And, you know, we looked at the receivers. This is not a great draft at receiver. You know, there's just a couple guys, and then after that, it's a bunch of big, tall guys that can't run.
Yeah.
You know, and when I look at those guys, and it's interesting you bring those up, I like that group of guys. Now, Vincent Jackson's got age on him, right? But I think he's a pro. And you look, he averaged 16.5 a catch. Mike Evans, 16.3 a catch. Seferian Jenkins, 16.1 a catch. Those are good per-catch averages.
Yeah.
But then you dig a little deeper, you bear in a little tighter, and what do you see? 10 touchdowns between those three guys. That's it. And when you think about your top three, your big three on offense at the receiving positions, and you only have 10 touchdowns in a 16-game season, that's not very good production. So they need better red zone production. And exactly like you said, Neil, give me that guy in the slot who can make plays and who's tough. Give me an Edelman, give me a Beasley, give me an Austin, give me one of those kind of guys, and watch this offense take off.
the running back position is set, Jeff. They re-signed Doug Martin. Charles Sims is a versatile backup. He had 529 rushing yards, 561 receiving. The offensive line, they lost Logan Mankins, but they signed J.R. Sweezy from Seattle. They had a couple of good rookies last year, Donovan Smith and Ali Marpet. So there are pieces in place here. But let's talk about the quarterback, because obviously he came in with big expectations. Jameis Winston's first NFL pass was a pick six the other way against the Titans. But I think I mentioned this, Jeff, when we went on the road and we did our Inside the Huddle podcast tour. This was big for Jameis Winston. There were no off-the-field headlines. He buckled down. He seemed to enjoy the hard work. He called it the best year of his life. He threw for over 4,000 yards. And I think he's got himself a nice platform. And let's see if he can build on it.
I agree. And I'll be more than happy to tell anybody this. I did not particularly like him coming into the draft.
Yeah.
And I didn't like him for the reasons that you spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
Too many interceptions as a college player. Too much off-the-field distraction as a college player. At least in his first year, he was able to mitigate both those areas of concern. Now, he still threw 15 picks against 22 touchdowns. But you didn't see after the first half of the season, you really didn't see the disaster throws, like the one you just mentioned, and like you saw so many of at Florida State. He did throw for 4,000 yards. He did complete 58% of his passes. He did show leadership ability. All of those things make you say, here you go, kid. There's your first year. Like you say, this is your platform now. Take it and run with it and go be a great quarterback. Go be a franchise quarterback.
What else does this team need, Jeff? So, I mean, we've mentioned cornerback, pass rusher, because they've got some good players, haven't they? They've got Lavonte David on defense. Quan Alexander was a good rookie who was having a good season before he was suspended for his last four games. So there's lots of little pieces in place. I mean, they're not a complete team, but you've got to be, as a Bucs fan, you've got to be thinking that it's, we sometimes talk about arrow up or down. This, to me, it feels like it's an arrow up team.
I think so, and I think they'll get more diversified on defense. I think they were very, very simple on defense. Part of that by need. They had to play the cover two because they didn't have guys that could play man-to-man outside. But I think they'll be more diversified on defense, and that'll help them on defense. I identify punter and kicker as both areas of concern because neither of these two guys, Barth or Shum, has the kind of explosiveness or distance that you look for, either as the punter or in the long field goal game. And, you know, again, we talk about what division you're playing in. Well, you know, here's again a team that really, without a whole bunch of fixing, should be able to climb into a more competitive position, you know, in that division.
All right, should we take some questions from the mailbag, Jeff? You ready for that?
Let's do it.
All right, so this one's from James Hollins. And he just wants a name, Jeff. We're just going to give a name straight away. Who will be the week one starter at quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers?
Wow.
I'll go first. Blaine Gabbert.
I agree. I think you're right. I think that Kaepernick will get traded and they'll draft a guy and come out with, you know, Gabbert, hopefully, if they don't put a young kid right out there to start, I just don't think that's in the best interest of Jared Goff or whoever they would take with that pick. But, again, I think Gabbert can help that kid learn and, you know, basically, this sounds terrible to say it, but take some of the hits that the young kid doesn't need to take.
This one from Joe McNicholas, who says, do you think Johnny Manziel has any future in the NFL? So Johnny signed on with Drew Rosenhaus, hasn't he, Jeff?
Yeah, this is an interesting one for us because we own Johnny Manziel's rights in the Canadian Football League. So we're watching this very, very closely. You know, again, when he went out and signed Rosenhaus, you knew that there was going to be, within days, there was going to be some sort of big announcement. And Rosenhaus announced today, I think it was, at the NFL head coaches meetings that there are more than a few teams, is how he described it, have interest in Johnny Manziel. I would be surprised if that was the case.
See, Jeff, I was going to make some sort of joke about, well, get the beers in up in Canada, but actually maybe going to Canada is what Johnny Manziel needs to do, because no one's going to believe his words anymore. I mean,
he's got to
show it.
You're exactly right, Neil. I mean, you can't. You after a while, people really grow weary of what you say, and they want to see what you do. That's what matters. This is a prove it to me league, and you know, you can talk all the talk, and you can, you know, say that you're all the right things and all of this, and have your agents say all the right things, but ultimately you have to perform on the field. And again, this league in the past has provided, you know, places for guys to do that. Ricky Williams is a perfect example.
Right.
After he failed his drug tests in Miami, he was able to come up here and continue to play and put good tape on the field and show people that he could take care of himself, and ended up going on and finishing his career in a more positive way, certainly than he was remembered in Miami for all of the issues with his off the field stuff. So this league is built for that, and you know, again, he would not be the first guy to have that opportunity to come up and do that.
It feels like, Jeff, that, you know, there's all this every other night, it seems there's a picture of him out partying somewhere, and more stories emerging that he wasn't a good worker and wasn't committed to the playbook. I can't see teams touching him until he puts together an extended run somewhere, and that's probably going to have to be out of the NFL. So you could be getting a knock on your door soon.
Yeah, well, you know, stay tuned, as they say, because you know it could very well happen, and you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the kid shoots. I'm gonna tell you something. The kid's got ability. Now, he's small, and there's a lot of things about him that you don't like too, but I always root for an athlete to for the light to come on, I guess is the way you say
right.
it, and certainly. He's been floundering around in the dark long enough, and it's time for the light to come on with a kid. And you know, I think that any place that takes him, he's got to understand what a privilege he's got, another opportunity. And a lot of people don't get second chances. And if you get a second chance, Johnny, take advantage of it.
All right, this question from Ian McLean, Jeff, who says, with the Pro Bowl needing a change, what ways do you think it could be improved? And then he's put # scrap it all together. I mean, Jeff, this is the fundamental problem, is you cannot play a friendly version of American football.
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting this week, Neil. I don't know if you caught this, but there was talk about them paying the players on an incentive-based way in the Pro Bowl.
I did see that, yeah.
You know, I think the league really, and this is almost like one of those ones where the commissioner is just going to, he's going to fight and try and find ways to save the thing. I think personally, I truly think personally, it's outlived its usefulness.
Yeah.
And the reality of the game is that, you know, obviously when these guys are making the money that they're making, to go out there and put your career at risk really doesn't make much sense.
No, and I think the commissioner will fight to a certain point, Jeff, but he's also the one that put the players on notice, because the players want it. The players like to go and hang out in Hawaii, and quite rightly so, at the end of a long season. But, you know, what we saw in the last Pro Bowl was embarrassing. They weren't even tackling people to the ground, and you're asking people to pay to buy tickets for that. It's whether it's replaced with a skills competition. I mean, would people really go and watch a skills competition? I'm not sure. They would do that either. So I don't think the bonuses work, because you know, JJ Watt gets a pretty handsome paycheck anyway, you know. So I'm not sure that would be the incentive. I think the Pro Bowl could be sort of running its course.
Well, I think it's really interesting what's going on over here right now, and I was curious to talk to you about this. You know, Richard Sherman made some very, very derogatory comments towards the commissioner yesterday.
Yeah.
And then I heard Ryan Clark basically stand up for Richard Sherman's comments today, and Ryan Clark actually talked openly about what he considers animosity between the Players Association and the commissioner.
Oh yeah.
And it's really gotten to be, I think, an uncomfortable situation for both sides.
Yeah, if the NFL says the sky is blue, then the NFLPA are going to say it's red. I mean, that's that's pretty much where they're at the moment. And thankfully, we have another 5 years of the current CBA to run, because otherwise, I think they'd be butting heads again. That seems to be, there's always something between the league and the union at the moment.
Yeah, and I again, that's exactly the tone that Ryan Clark had, and he talked about the last time where, you know, he mentioned Jerry Jones as being defiant in face of the players, and Jerry Richardson speak, and this is now a quote from Ryan Clark. I see Jerry Richardson, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, spoke to Peyton Manning like he was a 12-year-old child. So right. Obviously there's some really, really, you know, discord between those two sides.
Absolutely. Jeff, we're out of time, so good stuff this week. I can go off and blow my nose now, and you can go off and get ready for Johnny Football. Johnny Football's coming to town.
Hey, now, don't be spreading rumors now.
This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Until next week, we thank you for your company. Say goodbye to the good folks, Coach.
Aloha.